This is Mark White.
And I'm Katie Smith.
And we're coming to you from the Butcher Meat Co. in Vonmont, Alabama, inviting you to the Butcher's 4th Annual Smoke and Flames Barbecue Cook-Off. Katie, tell us about it.
We are a KCBS-sanctioned event. We are still accepting teams. We're going to have arts and crafts vendors all day long, a kids zone, People's Choice Boston Butt Competition. You can try all the barbecue. Chuck Wagon Food Truck, best food truck in Cullman County. We're so excited.
Find out more information at butchersmokeandflames.com.
Have you been searching for a rewarding career as labor, skilled labor, or lead man supervisor? Premier Structures may have the career you've been looking for. Premier Structures offers 3 stages of profit sharing, 70% of health insurance covered for individuals, and plenty of room for growth. Premier Structures is located in Athens, Alabama, and serves all of North Alabama, and is licensed in Alabama and Tennessee. To find your career with Premier Structures, go to premierstructures.com or give them a call at 256-232-2092.
With 6 convenient locations to serve you, Bankston Motorhomes is your local RV dealer. They have some of the top brand name RVs for sale at incredible prices. Whether you are looking for an awesome RV for a long-term road trip or a smaller or more lightweight RV for the occasional weekend getaway, Bankston Motorhomes is here to provide you with some outstanding options and deals that you just won't find anywhere else. For more information, go to BankstonMotorhomes.com or visit one of their 6 convenient locations in Huntsville, Florence, Warrior, Albertville, and Ardmore in Nashville, Tennessee. That's Bankston Motorhomes.
With locations in Tuscumbia, Florence, Muscle Shoals, Russellville, Killen, Madison, and Athens, Singing River Dentistry provides the most advanced dental care, including same-day crowns and implants, in a compassionate and friendly atmosphere. They excel in educating their patients and themselves about the benefits of keeping a healthy smile for a lifetime. The care of their patients is the center of their practice. They value their patients' time, trust, and total health. For more information about their practice or to request an appointment, go to SingingRiverDentistry.com.
Need the perfect fit? Whether it's hemming pants, altering a wedding gown, or giving your favorite outfit a brand new look, Coronation Tailoring and Alterations has you covered. We're your local experts in custom tailoring right here on Highway 72 next to 306 Barbecue in Athens, Alabama. Stop by today or call 256-444-0077 to schedule your fitting. That's Coronation Tailoring and Alterations, where your style is always in good hands.
J. Calvert Farm, located 3 miles south of Dodge City on Highway 69, exit 299 off Interstate 65. Give them a call at 256-636-2752. That's J. Calvert Farm in Dodge City, Alabama.
Hey everybody, this is Daryl Worley, and you're listening to The Mark White Show. Hey, step up and make a difference like he does.
This is Nico Johnson from Andalusia, Alabama. Be where your feet are. You listen to The Mark White Show.
Hey y'all, this is Jeff Foxworthy, and you, yeah, you can make a huge difference in somebody's life. You just may not have figured out how yet, and that's why you're listening to The Mark White Show.
Hi, I'm Crystal Gale, and you're listening to The Mark White Show, and one smile can make a difference.
Hello, I'm Gene Stallings, and this is the Mark White Show. Get off the sideline and get involved and make a difference in your community.
You are listening to the Mark White Show. My daddy is your host, Mark White.
Welcome to another edition of the Mark White Show, where we're here to recognize difference makers in our communities and share stories to encourage and inspire us all to make a difference where we can. And we all know that history is covered with people who are politicians and famous leaders and those who are recognizable names as to making a difference. But I want to submit that many people who have changed the world, they've done it as ordinary people who simply decided to care for others. Today's story takes us back to 1959 during one of the most divided parts of our American history. And two families involved in this conversation, one black from South Bend, Indiana, and the other white from Spring Valley, Minnesota, began an unlikely friendship through a simple letter. That friendship would eventually capture national attention and become a remarkable example of courage, compassion, and the power of human connection. Joining me right now is author Eric Christensen, who along with his late wife Joyce brought this incredible story to life in the book South Bend to Spring Valley, The David's Sims Story. It's more than a historical account. This book fulfilled Joyce's final wish before her passing, making it a deeply personal labor of love for Eric. Welcome to The Mark White Show, Eric Christensen.
Well, thank you, Mark. It is an absolute delight to be here and to share this incredible story with your audience.
And Eric, before we get into the story itself, I really would like for our listeners to get to know you and even Joyce. I want you to tell us about yourself, what led you to become ultimately the one who completed this book.
A lot of people have told me that the story behind the story is just as compelling as the story itself. And what I should tell your audience is that South Bend to Spring Valley, of course, is a true story, but the events in the book happened to my wife when she was a child. And she was so impacted by those events that she swore that one day she would write a book about that. Now, fortunately, her mother kept a scrapbook of the correspondence between the two families, as well as newspaper articles that were clipped regarding the events that happened during the friendship. So she had the fodder to write the book. But neither she nor I are published authors. And because of that, and because it's so hard to write a book, and probably the hardest part's getting started, it just got shelved, put away on the back burner for a later day. Well, several years ago, her health began to decline. And she realized that if she was ever going to write this book, it was now or never. As I mentioned, and you mentioned as well, the way that this friendship got started is first through correspondence, and we can go into that a little bit later as to exactly how that happened. But the first thing to write the book was to take those letters that that her mom had saved and get them typed up, because they were written in cursive and faded over 60 years and just weren't suitable for putting into a book as is, because it was Joyce's goal to tell the story through the correspondence. Well, she got about maybe a third of the way through typing up the letters and just ran out of steam. She had diabetes. She was battling her second bout of shingles and some other health issues, and she just couldn't carry on. And she asked me to do that. And of course, I said that I would. I worked three jobs and then taking care of her. And so getting those letters typed up was slow going. It took me close to a year before I finally got them all typed up. Well, by the time that I did, she had also been diagnosed with stage 5 kidney failure. Dialysis wasn't an option. And so we opted for hospice care, and we had a hospital bed set up in our living room. And one night when she was near the end, I was sitting by her, holding her hand, and forgive me if I get emotional here, because I always do, no matter how many times I tell this story. She squeezed my hand, and she looked at me, and she said, "Eric, I need you to finish what I started." And I said, "Of course I will." Yeah, I made a promise to her. The book was going to get written. Now, of course, the book didn't get written right away because I was so overcome with grief. I didn't want to do anything. I couldn't do anything. I was just too grief struck to even function, let alone write a book. But about a year after her passing, I began to feel like a voice in my head almost saying, "Eric, you promised that you would write the book. It's time." And I ignored the voice at first, but it was relentless. And so finally I said, okay, I'll write the book. I made the promise. I need to do this. And that's how the writing of the book came to be. And I can talk more about the process and everything, but that gives your audience an idea of how this book came to be. It was Joyce's dream to write the book. And I made a promise to her that I would pick up where she left off and continue it. And South Bend to Spring Valley is the result.
And Eric, I would like for you to share what was happening in America from your understanding that made this friendship so extraordinary in 1959.
Certainly. For those not familiar with American history during that period of time, for the longest time, because of a Supreme Court ruling, separate but equal policy reigned. And while facilities for blacks and whites were separate, they were certainly not equal. Brown versus Board of Education changed all that, and segregation was outlawed and integration was mandated. However, just because that happened doesn't mean that there weren't areas of segregation still present during that time. And of course, there was a plenty of animosity still between the two races regarding integration versus segregation. And so for blacks and whites to fraternize and to develop the kind of friendship that these two families had was rare. It was frowned upon. And the two families got plenty of hate mail regarding it, and some even death threats. So for the Davids and the Sims to form the kind of extraordinary friendship that they did during a time of such political and social unrest and racial bias really was a testament to the two families, to their belief in each other, to their belief in humanity. Because if you read the book, you can't help but be awestruck by the positive attitude that Mr. Sims had, despite what he and his family had to go through growing up black in a white America, the discrimination that he faced and everything. So much of it was due to the Christian faith that both families had and exemplified. And they really were a shining example to others of what Martin Luther King Jr. professed. They really did judge people by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. And I really think that what they exemplified kind of stands out as a beacon of hope to all who strive for racial harmony.
And Eric, as we're doing now via radio show, radio podcast, reaching out through radio stations, this story begins with the radio broadcast. I would like, and with Bob Considine, and I would like for you to tell us about David Sims, Rosalind Davids, how one program on NBC changed the course of both of these families' lives.
There are just so many extraordinary aspects to this story that makes you wonder, how did this even happen? And it all started, as you said, back in 1959. Rosalind Davids, who of course would later become my mother-in-law, was listening to a program called Image Series. And she enjoyed that program very much. The program usually had some kind of a guest. And the host of Image Series, as you mentioned, was Bob Considine. And for your listeners who may not be familiar with that name, Bob Considine was a big deal. He was a very well-known writer and reporter at that time. And one of his many exploits was hosting this show. And the program was produced by another person who would later become a heavy hitter in the industry, Peter LaSalle. Peter LaSalle would later go on to become the executive producer for The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson and Late Night with David Letterman. But at that time, he was just kind of an up-and-comer. Anyways, so Rosalind is listening to this program that night, and the guest happens to be David Sims. Mr. Sims was kind of the Martin Luther King Jr. of his area. He was a social activist. He had trouble keeping a job, as many of his black brethren did back at that time, not because he wasn't skilled or a hard worker, but simply because, as he puts it, when it came time for hiring and firing, blacks were always the last to get hired and the first to go. And so he was, despite only a 10th grade education, he was quite well spoken. And he was the one that would speak up for issues regarding the West Bend area. And as it so happens, the National Urban League was responsible for finding someone who could eloquently present what struggles black families had to go through in trying to make ends meet in a white America. And Mr. Sims was chosen from quite a large number of folks to be on Image Series to relate that. So in the process of that interview, he happens to mention that he had never been invited into the home of a white person as a guest. Well, Rosalind Davids took that as challenge accepted. She was just the kind of person that would right every wrong were it within her power to do so. And she felt that this just could not stand. So she immediately talked to her husband about the ramifications of inviting a black family they didn't know to their farm near Spring Valley, Minnesota for a week for no reason other than to get to know them and maybe further race relations. So she decides she's going to write the letter, but then, of course, realizes I have no address to send this to. How do I get the address? So she got in touch with KROC out of Rochester, the radio station that broadcast the show, and asked if there was any way that she could get that information. And they said, no, we don't have that information and we couldn't give it to you even if we did. But here's what we will do. If you will write the letter, we will make sure it gets to NBC Studios in New York. After that, it's out of our hands. So Rosalind said, sure, if that's the best you can do, I'll take it. So she writes the letter. KROC, true to their word, gets it to NBC Studios in New York. Fortunately, it lands in the lap of Peter LaSalle, the executive producer. He is so taken by it that he gets in touch with Bob Considine and says, we need to get a hold of this David Sims. How did you get this guy on the show? And Bob Considine says, well, I went through the National Urban League, and my contact is a man named Dennis Dowdell. And LaSalle says, well, you need to get a hold of him and make sure that he gets this letter in Mr. Sims' hands. And so he did. And so some 2 to 3 months after the letter was sent, it finally made its way to Mr. Sims, a minor miracle in and of itself. Now, I want your listeners to imagine for just a moment that it's 1959. You're a fly on the wall in Mr. Sims' house. And he opens this letter from and starts to read it, realizes it's from some white family that he doesn't know. And this lady is inviting him and his family. And by the way, that was him and his wife and 8 kids to come to their farm in Spring Valley, Minnesota. Well, he consulted with his family and with other friends and neighbors about what to do. And pretty much everybody said, don't go. That's an all-white area. You're going to get lynched. But for whatever reason, he and his immediate family believed in Rosalind's sincerity. And he wrote Rosalind back and said, thank you so much for the offer. It means the world to us that you would do something like this. But I've just recently gone back to work, and my family needs the income. So I'm going to have to pass. But again, thank you so much for the offer. And Rosalind writes back and says, that's okay. It's a standing offer. You just come when you can. In the meantime, how about we get to know each other? And that is what sparked the correspondence between the two families that went on for many, many years. And that eventually led to the Sims finally coming to the Davids for a visit for what turned out to be a very eventful week.
Right now, folks, we're talking with author Eric Christensen. He's co-author of South Bend to Spring Valley, The Davids Sims Story, along with his wife, Joyce, who is no longer with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about how this remarkable friendship grew, the challenges that both families faced, and why this story still matters in America today. I hope you'll stick with us. You are listening to The Mark White Show, and I'm your host, Mark White. All we have to do is try. Yeah, every day's a chance to change somebody else's life. Let's all do something good today.
Since 1943, Athens Bible School has endeavored to provide quality education in a Christian environment and to equip young people with the tools to be successful. With the Bible at the foundation, with all of our curriculum from pre-K to 12, ABS has something unique to offer. Find out more information at athensbible.com.
With 6 convenient locations to serve you, Bankston Motorhomes is your local RV dealer. They have some of the top brand name RVs for sale at incredible prices. Whether you are looking for an awesome RV for a long-term road trip or a smaller or more lightweight RV for the occasional weekend getaway, Bankston Motorhomes is here to provide you with some outstanding options and deals that you just won't find anywhere else. For more information, go to BankstonMotorhomes.com or visit one of their 6 convenient locations in Huntsville, Florence, Warrior, Albertville, and Ardmore in Nashville, Tennessee. That's Bankston Motorhomes. Hydration Lounge, located in Athens, Alabama, now offers medical weight loss consultations. We discuss nutrition, diet, and lifestyle, as well as prescription medication. Visit us at hydrationl.com for more information.
No representation is made that the quality of legal services to be performed is greater than the legal services performed by other lawyers.
Losing a loved one is hard, but losing a loved one and not having an estate plan is even harder. Attorney Harlan Mitchell witnessed what not having an estate plan can do to families and decided to use his experience to do something about it. I encourage you to go to BamaEstatePlanning.com or give Harlan Mitchell a call at 256-216-9884. Again, that website is BamaEstatePlanning.com. Let Harlan Mitchell help you with estate planning. Do it for those you love and do it today.
This is William Lee Golden with the Oak Ridge Boys. I want to invite you to join Mark White on The Mark White Show and find out how to be encouraged in life, regardless of who you are.
Welcome back to The Mark White Show. It's my privilege right now to have author Eric Christensen to talk about South Bend to Spring Valley, The Davids Sims Story. It's a remarkable true story of friendship, faith, courage, and humanity that crossed racial lines during one of the most turbulent periods in American history. Eric, thank you again for joining me here on The Mark White Show today.
Oh, thank you. The honor is all mine. I just so appreciate any opportunity that I have to be able to relate this amazing story to any and all folks that would be interested and benefit from it.
And obviously the people who get the book into their hands have the opportunity to read. They have the opportunity to read letters that these two families went from strangers to close friends before ever meeting in person. Through those letters, what stood out to you as you read through the years of their correspondence?
Excellent question. And I want to go back to something I said earlier. When Joyce could no longer continue typing up the letters and asked me to step in, I did not know that much about the story. All I knew is that they befriended a Black family back in the 1960s, and that family came for a visit, and it made national news, but that's really about all that I knew. It wasn't until Joyce asked me to take over, and I had to, of course, to read the letters in order to be able to get them typed up and saved on our computer, that I began to realize what an incredible story it was. One of the things that stood out to me was how loving both families were towards each other right away. And they hadn't even met yet. For those of your listeners who decide to get the book, I think that's one thing that will stand out to them as well as when you're reading the book, you can't help but be in awe of how close they became with each other before they even met. They were absolutely the best of friends with an incredible, loving, faith-based fellowship before they ever met, just thanks to writing letters back and forth to where they got to know each other. You don't have to be a Christian to enjoy the story, but if you are, you can appreciate their faith and how it's interweaved within the letters that cause you to realize, these people really do practice what they preach. And that they just could not wait to get together and meet for the first time, but it was just setback after setback that wouldn't allow that to happen. Another thing that stands out to me, and I've already alluded to it, is how eloquent Mr. Sims expressed himself in letters, despite only having a 10th grade education. That was one thing that just blew me away. And it also highlighted just how committed he was to the cause of gaining equal rights for African Americans at that time. It was just amazing to me as I read the letters to understand how deeply these two families felt about each other before they ever even met. And you would just have to read the letters to get the full impact. And I think that's one of the reasons that Joyce wanted the story told that way, is because the letters themselves are so impactful. That also, I think, is one of the things that makes the book stand out from perhaps other historical nonfiction narrative type of stories and memoirs, is that the story is told in the words of Mr. Sims and Mrs. Davids. So as you're reading the book, it's like you're right there sitting beside one of the two as they're writing the letter, and you really just get a better feel for how they felt about each other, the things that they were going through, the more that you read. And of course, it was my job to carry on what Joyce wanted to do, because she wanted the story told that way. And then to fill in the gaps, so to speak, in between the letters. So I would read a letter, and I tried to read the letter as if I wasn't the author, and think, okay, was everything in that letter sufficiently fleshed out? And if yes, then I would just go on to the next letter. If no, then I would add my commentary in between letters so that folks could get a better understanding of what was transpiring at that time. But suffice it to say, the more that I read as I typed up the letters, the more I realized that, wow, this is an actual piece of history. This is a story that needs to be told.
Eric, one of the things that stood out to me about the relationship that these two families had was the respectfulness, the thoughtfulness, because after the fact, when NBC had completed their show and the letters began, and then NBC again was interested in this story because of the exchange between the two families, and they were interested in the letters, and they wanted those letters, but Rosalynn, as well as Mr. Sims, indicated to each other that they wanted to respect each other and their privacy depending on how they felt about the letters being released. And both of them came from that perspective of, what do you think about this?
You're absolutely right there. There was some concern about that their relationship would be exploited for purposes that they didn't intend, because understand that the Davids and the Sims were very humble people. They did not do this for attention. They did not strike up this conversation between the two and write back and forth with the idea that, hey, maybe someday, you know, somebody, the right somebodies will see this and read it and want to write a story about us. That wasn't part of it at all. These were just two friends that felt deeply about each other, and they weren't doing this as crusaders to enhance race relations. Now, they were aware that that could be a possibility, but they were just very, very concerned that in the wrong hands, that making their sentiments public could be exploited in a way that they wouldn't approve of. But the more that they discussed it, the more that they realized, well, that may or may not be the case. But the bottom line is, if our friendship can somehow improve race relations in America, then it's worth making those sentiments public if the story to be told will do just that. And so eventually the two families did agree to the use of their letters in a public way. And one of the things that I was really curious about is, did Bob Considine actually ever write an article for any of the sources that he wrote for that expounded upon this friendship? And unfortunately, I could find no evidence of that. So even though they did express eventually their approval for the letters to be used in such a way, I don't think that ever happened, which is a shame, because Bob Considine had a huge audience back then. And if he wrote such an article, it certainly would have been seen by thousands of people and maybe would have had an even greater impact than it actually did. But who knows? Maybe he wrote the article and I've just not been able to find it, but I could find no such thing, which is a shame.
Well, and maybe here in the time that we're living in, this can be impactful, and listeners who have heard the story thus far and are interested in the book, this gives them an opportunity to see those letters and to use those letters in a way that would be respectful of the memories of both families. And Joyce was behind you deciding to finish this. This was her wish, and you completed that.
Yes.
And I really would like to think about Joyce sitting beside us right now in this conversation, holding the finished book in her hands. And I would like to hear from you, what do you think she would want readers to take away from this story?
Just that intro kind of got to me, so I might need to gather myself for just a second. Joyce was very passionate about what she believed. I should tell you that Rosalind Davids is probably the greatest human being that I've ever known, just in terms of her faith, her actions, her love for everybody. Incredible. Well, Joyce is a carbon copy of her mom. And part of the reason that she wanted this story to be told is because of how impactful those events were in her childhood of the Davids and the Sims getting together. And she, like her mom, was an advocate for many different causes, one of those being race relations. As an interesting side note, your audience might like to know, Joyce and I lived for 40 years in Austin, Texas. And when we first moved there, she had already been accepted to the University of Texas. But when we went to register, it was a madhouse, and she was just a number. And she came away from there in tears saying, I don't want to go to this college. And I said, well, I'm sure there are plenty of other colleges in Austin. So we literally found a phone book and looked up in the yellow pages, colleges and universities, and found one called Houston-Tillotson College, which wasn't too far of a drive from UT. So we drove over there and parked and went into the registrar's office there and couldn't help but notice that everyone was African-American. So we thought, is this maybe an all-black college? Well, let's talk to who's in here and we'll find out. So we did. And in the process of the conversation, there was a bit of a lull. And it was obvious from the questions we were asking where we were headed. And the registrar said, oh, honey, we don't discriminate against white folk. it affected both of us in a very positive way. Joyce told a little bit more about what she was interested in. Well, again, at UT, she was just a number. Nobody knew her or offered anything. The registrar says, tell you what, I'm going to give you the personal home phone number of our music department head. Her name is Beulah Agnes Curry Jones. And you call her and you tell her what you told me. And then the two of you can chat and you can see if Houston-Tillotson is a good fit. Wow. So, I mean, she doesn't know Joyce from, well, I shouldn't say Adam, from Eve. And she is giving away the personal home phone number of the head of the music department. Well, Joyce called her and the two of them hit it off tremendously well. And she remained a good friend, Beulah Agnes did, to Joyce's passing. But she enrolled in Houston-Tillotson. She was the only white student there. And it was either 2 or 3 years later, she graduated, and she was the only white student there that graduated. So he was very passionate about this kind of thing. And so I know that he would be very happy with the fact that I wrote the book, but understand that initially I just wrote the book because I wanted to complete the promise that I made to her. If I make a promise, I keep it. But in the process of writing the book, I found that it was helping me too. It was therapeutic to write it because it gave me purpose again when I didn't have any. And the more that I progressed in writing the book, the more that I realized, you know what? I've got to go beyond what I just said that I was going to do. Because I could have just written the book and got it published and got it on Amazon and then just told a few friends and family, hey, I wrote this book. I think it's pretty good. It's about a black and white family that struck up a friendship in the 1960s, et cetera. So you might like it. I figured that I'd sell, 30 or 40 books, something like that. And that was all that I was interested in doing. But the more that I wrote, the more that I realized, you know what? This is a piece of American history, and this is something that needs to be out there for the masses to at least know about. And then if they want to read about it, if this kind of thing is of interest to them, even better. And so I think that Joyce would be very pleased not just that I completed a promise that I made to her, but that I'm making the extra effort to tell the story in various formats that will get it out there into the public so that more people will know about it. Because the more folks that know about it, the more that folks can realize that, you know, we don't have to stay divided like we are now. We don't have to listen to the folks that are doing the dividing. The Sims and the Davids provided a blueprint for racial harmony. We just have to follow it.
And Eric, it's interesting that this weekend in Danville, Alabama, they're celebrating the 90th anniversary of Jesse Owens's 4 gold medals in 1936 in Berlin, Germany, and they're having an event. And I did an interview yesterday with Teague McKay, who is the educator at Jesse Owens Museum, and that conversation will be airing on the show soon. So I hope that both of these conversations reinforce exactly what you just shared with our audience. And I do want to mention that it was Aubrey's Love Foundation that you heard about, and you saw it as a meaningful example of how small acts of kindness can leave a lasting impact. And so you thought that my listeners would connect with your story of how friendship and compassion crossed racial lines during a deeply divided time. And I appreciate the fact that you reached out and shared with me today. And I do want our listeners to be able to connect, to find the book, and any ways that you want them to connect with you so that they can learn more about this story.
Sure. The book is pretty much available on any online bookstore. Most people go to Amazon, but you don't have to. Whatever your preferred place of buying a book online is, if you just type South Bend to Spring Valley in the search bar, it's bound to come up. I would like your listeners to know that it is available in paperback, hardcover, ebook, or audiobook for those folks that are listeners more so than readers. And one interesting aspect of the audiobook is that most are narrated by one person because they're fiction and you only need one person to narrate it. But given the nature of this story, I wanted a separate narrator for Mr. Sims. I wanted a separate voice for Mrs. Davids. And I wanted separate voices for some of the other folks too. And so there are actually 11 different voice actors on the audiobook portraying all the different folks that are featured in the book. And one is my sister-in-law, Joyce's sister, Pat, who voices the letters written by her mom, which I thought was extra special. The other thing that I would want listeners to know is my website, SouthBendToSpringValley.com, and that's all one word. And if you go there, you can learn so much more about the Sims and the Davids, a lot of which is not in the book. There are extra pictures there. There are links to press releases and other video interviews that I have done. And one other thing I wanted to mention is, in case listeners are wondering, so whatever happened with the Davids and the Sims as they grew older? Well, as you might imagine, as that happens, your kids get older, you get more busy with things, the letter writing dwindled from regularly to just every once in a while. And the last time that the Davids and, well, any members of the Davids and Sims got together was 1977, when David and Ruby Sims brought their youngest daughter, Belinda, to the Mayo Clinic for a health issue. And some of the Davids were able to meet them there and have just an absolutely wonderful time. Well, that was the last time they got together until August of last year. I was able to organize a David's Sims reunion in conjunction with a book signing I was doing up in the Spring Valley, Minnesota area. And all of the surviving David's siblings were there. Some of the Sims were there. And we just had a grand old time. It was just so wonderful to actually meet some of the people that I've been writing about in the book. And there are lots of pictures and a video that was shot by a granddaughter of one of the daughters. It's just if you're enjoying the story, it's very moving to go there and see, wow, these were just kids when the events in the book happened. And now here they are as adults. And of course, everybody's like in their 60s or 70s now, but enjoying themselves like there wasn't even a decade's gap between then and when they saw each other last. So again, you can go to Amazon and get the book or any online bookstore, but I highly recommend that you go to SouthBendSpringValley.com and research more about the two families, just to get a better understanding of just how incredible the friendship was and how this really is an amazing piece of history that's never been told until now.
Folks, if you've enjoyed today's conversation, I encourage you to pick up a copy of South Bend to Spring Valley, The David's Sim Story by Eric and Joyce Christensen. And Eric, I appreciate the fact that you've joined me today sharing this remarkable story and for honoring your wife's final wish by bringing it to completion. I think this will be an encouragement and an inspiration to a lot of people. Thank you for being here on The Mark White Show today.
Oh, you're very welcome. It was absolutely my pleasure. Thanks.
Folks, here on The Mark White Show, we are recognizing difference makers and sharing their stories to encourage and inspire. And I hope you are encouraged and inspired by today's show, and you'll share it with your family, your friends, and your neighbors. You have been listening to another edition of The Mark White Show, and this is Mark White encouraging you to find your purpose by making a difference in someone's life today.
Thompson Roofing and Construction is a locally owned family business serving the North Alabama and Southern Tennessee area. They are a Better Business Bureau A-plus member since 2011 and a GAF Master Elite Contractor. Give them a call at 256-952-3309 or check them out on the web at 256roofing.com. They offer free inspections.
Thompson Roofing and Construction.
When you need it, Greens has it. At Greens Dependable Hardware in Russellville, Alabama, we've been helping our neighbors get the job done for over 75 years. From tools and paint to plumbing and lawn care, we've got the brands you trust and the service you deserve. Our knowledgeable staff is always ready to help you find exactly what you need and with a smile. Stop by Greens Dependable Hardware on Highway 43 in Russellville or call 256-331-0123. Greens Dependable Hardware, the name says it all.
Is it time for a haircut? Give my friend Philip Butler at Southwind Barbershop a call, located in Rogersville, Alabama. You can call him at 256-247-5658. Make an appointment or just walk in. That's Southwind Barbershop in Rogersville, Alabama.
Since 1943, Athens Bible School has endeavored to provide quality education in a Christian environment and to equip young people with the tools to be successful. With the Bible at the foundation, with all of our curriculum from pre-K to 12, ABS has something unique to offer. Find out more information at athensbible.com.
Demo the kitchen. Go tour the Dream College. We can help you get to those moments that matter.
Contact Brad Wallace, your Edward Jones financial advisor, on Hughes Road in Madison, Alabama. Edward Jones, making sense of investing. Member SIPC.
Some gentle people who shout a friendly hi when they go passing by, who live and love in my hometown. These are my kind of people.